Good evening, everyone. This is the meeting of the Community Services and Safety Committee. My name is Cynthia Delestrinos-Johnson. I am the chair of this committee, and I am here with my fellow council members, Councilmember Quinn and Councilmember Edan, and we will get this meeting started this evening. The first item on our agenda is an amendment to the contract with Karen Reed Consulting for consulting services to the Fire Advisory Committee. And I believe David's here to speak about that.
Yes, council members, if you turn to page one, you'll see a short summary. This is in line with council's direction. We appreciate the council's support for bringing additional facilitation and a financial consultant to assist us with our Fire Advisory Committee. It's been very helpful, I would say, and Deputy Chief Golden can echo those comments or weigh in on this. I think she's been a great facilitator, bringing people on board. She's helped facilitate during the summer months to do the internal work to get ready for the advisory committee that the council just launched on September 27th with the membership on October 4th. So we're ready to go. And this is just a contract for her facilitation for the advisory committee now. And what we would recommend is if the committee was ready to move this forward, is that this would go on the consent agenda at the next regular meeting.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions?
I just have kind of maybe a clarifying. So the assumption is kind of coordinate, help get up to speed, have back and forth with kind of the members and the structures, have clarity on the agreement that facilitation will continue into the space of this work. Is that kind of the line of the process?
Yes.
Okay. And Deputy Chief Golden, is that how you anticipated it would go as well?
Okay. Good evening to the committee, and thanks for the invite to weigh in. I agree wholeheartedly, and getting to work with both Karen and Bill, they're the dynamic duo. They've really done a great job of getting us on track, and I think they trimmed a lot of the meetings out just by this is what they do, and so their guidance has been huge. Now this is what moving into our next step, which is ultimately our goal, getting this community group together. Karen has offered to again guide us in that and facilitate. And across the board, you know, everybody's head was shaking. Yes, absolutely, this is what we want. It's just she's been proven. Her and Bill have been a great asset. And I know, speaking for our labor union, Chief Whitworth, myself. I really, really, we've hit a home run with this consultant group. She does not need to be brought up to speed on anything. This is exactly what she does. We're lucky we found somebody that specialized in this. And I think I fully support, and I think continuing her with the community group is going to enhance delivering the information to that group. And so I'm in full support of this amendment.
Definitely leave some space for Councilmember Edan and Chair Yu, and may have a follow-up, but don't want to just front-end a whole bunch of questions.
Thanks. Councilmember Edan?
I don't have any comments, questions, but I think I do support moving this forward. I think this is the right approach. I believe we do have a great consultant on board, and I can't wait until everything is moving and working. I yield back.
Thanks. I have just a couple questions. The first one is I can't remember, could you remind me what budget the this increase is coming out of?
This will be in the fire department's budget, and so it'll be part of the general fund. And so it'll be part of the balancing as we do the budget amendment. You'll notice, I believe this will be in a line item in the budget amendment as well. And if continuing on to 2022, which is the majority of this work will be done in 2022, which was not originally budgeted.
So can you explain what the change was? Because I remember this was always the plan was to work with the facilitator, but what changed to create the increase? I also agree with Ms. Reed has been great. I had an opportunity to meet with her, talk with her about her experience, but I'm just trying to understand when we realized that we needed to increase the contract.
The initial contract was really for the Internal Services Committee, and we didn't fully recognize there could have been different options as we went forward to launch the Advisory Committee. I think as we went to the Internal Advisory Committee and talking to Ms. Reed and others, we found that the best way forward is to continue her facilitation. And this is a maximum amount. I just want to be very clear that it is on a per hour basis. And so if we don't use this amount, we're not going to use this amount. This is to give us enough contract authority so the council can meet its stated goals. And it's on a per hour basis. So what we were concerned about was as we went into 2022 that we would exceed the current contract amount. So we wanted to give you enough flexibility going into 2022 that we could keep her on as a facilitator and not have to come to you later on.
Okay. I'm supportive of the amendment. Councilmember Quinn, did you want to ask some more questions?
Just a really quick follow-up. Just knowing that this is a dynamic group of residents who may have different needs along the way, what is your process for, you know, because there might be another amendment, and I'm not mm-hmm. suggesting that occur, but, you know, like, how do you make sure that we're all prepared for kind of maybe when there's adjustments or things that have been bubbling up that could potentially then, because I'll just throw this out, like, folks might need more time. Right. To have more meetings, depending on the issue, or something may require, you know, additional detailed information so folks can make decisions. And so how do we make sure that that's kind of tracked in the contract?
So great question, Councilmember Quinn. Actually, it's reflective of the internal conversation we had. Deputy Chief Golden and I were on a meeting with Karen Reed and Ms. Humphrey as well. She's been active in this. We meet every Monday, just so you know, as we work through the work plan. We were working through the work plan of the committee. And right now we have scheduled 9 meetings. And a key issue was how do we keep the council informed? And so we're already putting those dates, probably January and March, are 2 updates to the council, similar to what we did with the Financial Advisory Committee. That seemed to be a good update. And Ms. Reed even said, well, and if the council wishes to maybe have a joint meeting, that could be a possibility. We would keep you informed and take the council's direction on that as well. And she did leave with, and this is the agenda going forward. And as they co-create that space, it may be additive, it may change, and we'll keep, our goal is to be, you know, as we have continued to do, is be transparent and keep you informed as we go forward with this community group. But I think those 2 tie-ins in January and March will be one way that the council can be sure that we're on track with this budget amendment, but also the scope and work that you've given to us.
Thank you. Are there any more questions? Council members, are you comfortable moving this forward to consent? Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
All right, the second item on our agenda is the 2021 third quarter fire department report.
All right, jumping right into it. Thank you again. On behalf of Chief Whitworth, thank you for your time. Chief Whitworth is off and I'm in his place tonight. So I have the pleasure of giving our third quarter report. I'm going to share my screen. And I did want to mention, this isn't just my fashion sense. I have a pink t-shirt on for Breast Cancer Month. It's October. Fire department, you'll see your firefighters going around town with our shirts. And So just a quick shout out to that for October. I'm going to share my screen, and I hope it comes up with the PowerPoint. Can everybody see the PowerPoint? Excellent.
Yep.
So let's click over. Hopefully I can control it. Basically, the contents, this is Chief Whitwer's work product. Yeah, you've seen him before. I'm just going to keep with the same format. He actually put this whole thing together. And so if there is something that you want more clarification on or you have a question on, please let me know. But I assume most of this is stuff that you've seen before. The contents are going to be the same that we give every quarter. And I'll get into the changes, and I'm sure you'll have some questions with some of the, we found some anomalies, some changes that we'd like to look at. So basically call volume and our average response times are holding steady, and I just note they're some of the best in the area. Average response times are under 6 minutes, and the response time is a combination of the turnout time and our drive time. Turnout time is something that I tell our folks we have control of for the most part. That's how quickly we respond and jump on the rig. As soon as that tire turns going towards the call, that's our driving time. And driving safely, even though we're with lights and sirens, that time is very difficult to change. It's not like we can drive faster. It's either, you know, we get there safe, that's our priority. But I'm very proud of our response times. And one thing to note that you see different in 2021 is Station 52 and Station 54 are clearly carrying the bulk of the work. We have new locations for Station 51 and 52, and this is exactly how it was planned, just to spread some of that work. You see 51 is kind of a lower call volume, but that's based on a lot of development that we see coming in the future. Tukwila is one of the few areas that really understands what's going on in the future, and the placement of that fire department is going to be fantastic as we see that South Tukwila develop. But I'm really happy to see 52 and 54 is balanced out. Going on to the next slide, response type, this is very similar. You should be familiar with this. Most of our calls are medical calls, 66%. A lot of our calls in our zone, Tukwila has actually a little bit less EMS calls and a little bit more fire calls, and that's because alarms are lumped in with fire, and alarms are sprinkler water flow alarms, our automatic fire alarms, and our actual fires. But Tukwila has a lot of commercial buildings that have fire protection systems. You can distinguish that from Kent, Auburn, Renton, Federal Way, who have a lot of commercial buildings with no systems. Tukwila has been very progressive in the fire marshal office in getting systems put in older buildings, and new buildings, you're putting in systems per the fire code. So you can see a little bit of difference. Just for reference, Valley Regional would typically see 75-80% EMS calls, and the fire calls would be down 5-6%. Moving on to our next slide, this is just another, the data broken up a little differently. In the red, you're going to have all the calls we go to, everything lumped together, just to contrast with our EMS calls, which make up 66% of our calls. Again, this looks real familiar. 52 and 54 do more calls by about double than 51 and 53. And all of these numbers look pretty normal. There's nothing standing out that I feel, you know, I need to bring to your attention. And again, our response times are under 6 minutes. Very impressive to me. You should be proud of those in the area. I can tell you that's excellent response times. Funny to see the term COVID-19 highlights. It's rare to have the highlights, but what we've done is we've used the 3 years previous to COVID to set kind of our standards. So when we say, you know, we have this increase, we kind of threw out COVID just because the numbers would be skewed. Things to point out here is our overall call volume has increased 17%. That's pretty significant. With fire call volume up 47%. And I wasn't able to quickly determine that. I wanted to have a really nice answer for this committee to say, this is why. I wasn't able to determine it in my initial digging around, but I will try to figure that out and get back to the committee to determine why such a jump in the fire calls. What I believe it is, and the reason why it's taking me a little bit of time, is we've changed the way that we respond in the zone, meaning when there's a fire alarm at a high-rise commercial building in Renton, we're now sending one of our Tequila rigs and our Tequila BCs. And so we're going out of the area more, and I'm going to point that out. We're doing a more collaborative response, and we, being the whole zone, is doing it, but we, being Tequila, we really give a lot of support because of our size and our four stations. So we're seeing an increase in call volume based on our new automatic aid agreements in our area. So I'll show you on the next slide, and we can dig into that more, because I want to make sure that the committee understands what the change is coming from. To put it in a numbers perspective, you know, almost to year to date, almost 300 more calls. So that's pretty significant. You know, you figure we run 6,000 calls in Tequila, almost 300 new calls are going outside the Tequila area based on our regional response system. The way the regional response system was developed, the deputy or the operation chiefs, which are mostly deputy chiefs, looked at if we had no borders, if we were one giant department, what would it look like to dispatch to events throughout the area? And we've basically made agreements to do boundaryless responses. And the reason why we did that is there were significant time drops to the calls that we deemed most important. And that was fire calls for flashover and brain death calls, which is kind of a clunky name for anything where people are not breathing. Chokings, complete chokings, and CPRs. And we see the greatest changes in outcomes and life safety by responding to those two things in the quickest manner. So while Tequila has added some burden, our zone is enjoying some response times that are really cutting into those critical flashover and brain death pieces. Underneath, there was a lot of, there it is, of information here. I see Chief does it line by line for dramatic effect. So not that dramatic, but we got a new buggy for the battalion chiefs is what we call it. It's just basically a pickup truck that they command out of. And what I like about this, when I go to a fire scene, I'm jumping into this, and it used to be, you know, you jumped in, you know, on side by side, or I stood outside the window when we have a full command team set up. And now there's room for all three people. A support, the IC is usually your first responding battalion chief. So Don Tomaso will pull up on a fire. He'll be the incident commander. The next chief that shows up would be support officer and jump in shotgun there in the, you know, passenger side, would take over accountability, things of that nature. And then there's a senior advisor role, and that'd be a third chief that's not needed elsewhere that could come on and run like logistics, financial pieces, and these are going to be for larger events. Our new rig is designed to have that senior advisor jump in and have access to fire plans, the internet, things like that, because they could be scheduling things like getting a big piece of equipment, a bulldozer or something, from shops, or getting online to order food, logistical stuff. But our new rig has that in place. That's the new zone model, and it's really cool to see that. Our aid unit has been ordered for a while. It slowed down due to COVID, and there's a chip issue with vehicles. And so I'm not sure when our date is, but I believe it's pushed back into fourth quarter, and we'll keep you updated on that. We have it ordered. It's done. It's just a matter of it getting delivered. When I say done, it's the process is done. Who knows where they're at in the build? New stations. We're closing out 51 and 52, that opened in quarter one of this year. We're basically going through getting all the bugs worked out. They're both, as you know, beautiful stations. It's kind of a shame that during COVID, we couldn't host more events, couldn't host our community. You know, these are the type of things that we want the community to come and get their blood pressure checked, bring the kids to look at the rigs and stuff like that. And that's been shut down since both of these opened. The few people that have gone inside these stations have been blown away. The little pieces like, you know, the table made out of a tree that actually was felled in the Tukwila area. Little things like that just tie it to the community, and just the pride you see on people's face when they see their fire stations, it's fantastic. I wasn't part of any of this. I just happened to get to move right into that. But, you know, thanks to the design team, Captain Smith, Chief Kineska, Rachel Bianchi, Fire Chief Whitmer, and, of course, the council and the rest of the members of the Tukwila community that supported those stations. They're just beautiful. We continue to upgrade our policies. This is a project that has been ongoing. It was basically we're using light duty staff to review policies and bring them up to speed. I'm currently doing the most critical policies, like operational safety and COVID policies, things like that. Contemporary policy work. But I hope to go back to square one and go through all our policies, update them, update the references, and make sure they're still relevant. Of course, the way I do policies, and Chief Whitwer supports this, is I like to review them and I send them by the union for any intake from the bargaining unit. And it's great because it's another set of eyes that sometimes catch, typos, or they can weigh in on policy matters, and we can jointly agree to policies that work best for our city. Strategic plan. This is some we're looking at to update while balancing the next thing I'm going to talk about, and you're all familiar. We're underneath a process of how to financially serve our community in the best way for the best bang for our buck in a sustainable manner. And that has been the Community Services and Safety Committee pushing forward our goal to do a Community Advisory Committee. You know, our internal team has been working on that all year, and October 4th, the 13 members have been approved, and so that's a reality. So that strategic plan is basically going to be in the balance of what the community recommends and policy decisions. The things are going to be on the plate of the full council to provide direction. We have the telestaff integration. We're still working with the full financial piece. From what I've seen, it's been pretty, knock on wood, pretty event-free. I know the finance department is implementing an entire new program, and we'll want to make sure that our telestaff works with that. For people not familiar, telestaff is simply a web-based scheduling. Folks that need to ask for vacation, sick leave, or just look at their schedule can do it from home. I can grab it on my phone. It's just been a really great scheduling software package, and it's pretty prevalent in the area. It's what a lot of departments use. But its ability to connect in and do our payroll and all that has really been a time saver. And it's something, like I say, that's used throughout our zone and our area. Fire ESO integration is our reporting software. This is where when you get back from a call, you'll update things that are required for federal reporting, for state reporting. And we jumped into the ESO program that also has a patient interface, and we're using it for EMS calls. It was stood up back in quarter two, and very few bumps in the road. It's going real well. When I have to do a review of a call or there's a request for information, it's real easy for me to locate the call. It's intuitive. And the reason why I tell you that, you're probably saying, yeah, that's what reporting software should do. The previous models using the fire service, was not easy to use. It was very, very difficult. So ESO is jumped us ahead 20 years. Some of the regional things that Chief Whitwer mostly sits on are these committees. He's a very involved member with the training consortium, and he's brought me along on that as operations chief. I do sit on a board of just operations chief that gets to interact with the chief of the consortium. We get to recommend policy and direction to the fire chiefs who direct our training consortium. And you'll see the other groups that the chief works on or has worked on in the past. And one of the groups, the fire FE cares and EMS work groups, have been halted to COVID. It's shifted to a new group that both chief and I are on, and that's the COVID response mobile vaccination program. And then the fire department, we take advantage of hazmat and vehicle accident responses. We try to recover money from insurance companies on that. The EMS service contracts, we contract with a private ambulance provider, TriMed, to be our primary ambulance company to provide transport to regional hospitals. And false alarm billing is the when there's an automatic fire alarm or sprinkler system alarm that goes off, and because it malfunctions, we do have a charge for that, and not so much to build revenue, but to encourage getting people to fix the issue, because it does take our rigs out of service, and it pulls, like I told you earlier, all the regional response, it pulls a lot of people, you know, we have some big 18-story buildings, it pulls a lot of rigs out of their first due area. And when it's for something that's malicious or malfunction and needs to be fixed, this can help motivate people to call and get it fixed instead of just letting it go and letting the fire department run a bunch of false calls. Support services is managed by Battalion Chief Kineska. Emergency management was moved to our new emergency manager. You guys have all met her. She is fantastic. It was awesome to work with her on a couple of small projects, and then to see the review work that she did for Maple Crest. We look at that through the eyes of the fire department. It was really cool to see that through the eyes of the city and our new emergency manager. It reminded me of some perspectives that I don't necessarily consider in that, and there's a lot of support stuff that happens. So emergency management, I think that's been fantastic, and it's been a good resource for us. I see David wanting a high five. Yes, sir.
Deputy Chief Golden, I really appreciate the report. I also know there's three other things on the council's agenda tonight, so I'm hoping that you can kind of move through. I know the council can read a lot of the information, and it is a quarterly update. It's great information, but I know we have three other things, and Alina Perry was asked by the committee to come tonight, and so I'm hoping that we actually have some time to hear from Alina tonight. So apologize for the intrusion, Council, but I just wanted to make sure that you get what you need tonight as well. So thank you.
Thank you, David. As Dave Chappelle says, wrap it up. So with that, if you have any questions, and like I said, this is my first one. I get the time frame now. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer those, and if not, it's all in your packet. And that is the last slide, I believe. Either that or I'm locked up. Nope. So is there any questions from the chair? I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah. Let me go through my council members. We usually, you know, read through before. But I appreciated your presentation. It was the first time you were doing it, so I wanted to give you time. But I also understand that we want to be able to get through all the presentations. So I'll just take questions from council members now. Council Member Quinn.
I actually have a question. It doesn't have to be answered today. So as a matter of fact, let's not answer it today. My question, and this might fold in with the policies as well, is how often do the kind of different stations change the response time kind of methodologies. I think that would just be a good overall question that could fold into the policies and tee up for the task force. And that's all I have.
I'll get back to you. Thank you for that.
Councilmember Edan.
Thank you. My question was regards to the mutual aid. I think one of the things that mentioned in your presentation that was slightly higher, and what was that? What is that just within the third quarter, or that's just been a consistent from throughout the year? That was just seeing what the difference would looks between the third quarter versus throughout the year. I don't know if you want to respond to that now versus sometime later.
I could get back to you because that started in the second quarter, but I can get back to you with a better answer. And I'm sure the other council members would like to see a more fleshed out answer. So I'll get back to you on that one as well.
Thank you, Deputy Chief. I think you did an awesome presentation. So just want to let you know that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I had a couple questions. The first one is in the fire marshal's office slide. It says on the bottom, it says operational fire permit inspections and occupancy fire safety inspections, and that there's zero that have been provided. Could you just explain what those are?
Yeah. So, operational, if you have a business and it does something that's considered inherently dangerous, welding inside, the fire code requires a permit, and the fire marshal's office would traditionally give you a permit, and what that does is that pays for and triggers an inspection to make sure you're doing that safely. When we prioritize what we can do with our fire marshal resources, we do not have the resources to do the operational permits. But that is one of the first things we'd like to gear back up, because it somewhat funds itself, but it doesn't fully fund itself. And so that's why it's something that we used to do and we don't currently do it. Does that answer your question fully? I believe you're muted. Chair Delestranis Johnson.
Okay, thank you. The second question was around the mobile vaccination team and that it was suspended. Are there plans to bring that back, or is it just suspended indefinitely? Like, could you explain just that piece of why it's suspended and if it'll come back?
Sure. We're just ran into staffing issues and overtime obligations where we're running the department thin. And so we shut it down knowing that we got, for the most part, vaccinations where we accomplished what we're trying to get. Now we're on the cusp of boosters and really excited about the 5 to 12-year-olds. And I can just tell you, our mobile team is very excited. We want to partner with Tukwila Schools if we can. And that thing could be fired back up in 5 minutes. And so it really is just let's consider it hibernation right now, but we're hoping to get back out because the school piece we feel is going to be really exciting and a great way to engage in the community again.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for your presentation. Sorry we had to cut you short.
No, sorry for the time. I wish it was in person, then David could have kicked me under the table. I appreciate David stepping in. Thank you for your time tonight.
Yep. All right. Sorry, my agenda is sideways. trying to read it. The next agenda item is an update on the police records digitization project.
Yeah, Chief Drever, Eric Drever from the Tukwila Police Department. I also have our records manager here with us, Rebecca Hickson. She's our subject matter expert on this. I do want to drop a late notice on this. We actually just received the grant that will help cover some of this, And it's going to require us to come back and get council's authorization for the mayor's signature, because the total amount's $49,000 and some change. And we are hoping that we might be able to squeak that in here so that we could get it eventually to the council of the whole, since this is something we've been talking about for a while and finally able to bring to fruition. But as compared to waiting another 2 weeks so we can get access to the money that much sooner and start it this year. So with that, I'm going to pass off to Rebecca so she can fill you in on the details.
Thank you. I'm assuming you have the info memo. Would you like me to provide detail on that? Because I know you're kind of pushed for time, or would you like me just to answer questions?
Maybe just give a short summary and then we'll move into questions.
Okay. So we were able to come before the council in February 2020, and you approved $150,000 for us to do scanning for case records in the police department. And we began right away. We did test boxes in March. We were able to get through the 2005 and 2006 in April and May. Then, of course, you know, COVID visited us. And so we put everything on hold as far as the scanning went. We went ahead and got all our records into LaserFiche. They were accessible electronically, which has really helped with being able to respond to PDRs faster because we have the document electronically. And then we also, the records grant was put on hold. So we had put in an application, but then we were informed that the state was not going to issue any grants last year because they really didn't know where their budget was. So we were able to reapply for that this spring. And then we just found out a week ago that we were awarded it. And then, like Chief Drever said, today we actually got the agreement. So I forwarded that to the city attorney, and then that will require your approval for the mayor to sign that agreement. So we do have 8 years of case files ready to go to the scanner. Even though we haven't been able to scan, we've still been working on preparing those by taking out things that wouldn't need to be scanned. So our goal is to make sure that when they go to the scanner, we're using that money as well as we can, and just scanning the things that need to be scanned. And so we have 8 years ready to go. We have some new staff that will be working on scanning. They were fingerprinted today, and they'll be picking up two more test boxes next week, and we'll be starting again from now to the end of the year using PD funds to do a scanning, and then starting next January, we'll be using the grant funds to be able to do that. And my hope is between those two, we'll get, you know, up to that maybe 80-90% done on the scanning. So that's my update.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions?
No questions. We've talked about this quite a bit. Mrs. Hickson, thanks for this. This is kind of a no-brainer. We got the grant. But what I will say is I was, you know, I used to scan documents. So if you need any, if folks need any tips on that, did that early transition at Harborview. And I know that's, when you say 8 years, that's a lot of documents and QAQC involved. So I am definitely supportive of this moving forward.
Thank you.
Councilmember Edan.
Thank you. I really appreciate this getting done. So 2.2 million pages, when I read that, that's a lot. In the last sentence on their issue, it talks about, you know, must remain hard copy. I wanted to understand that. Why does it need to remain hard copy? Like, sounds like there is a portion that needs to remain hard copy.
There are some things that are considered archival, and so you aren't able to destroy the hard copy record. Our goal is to actually transfer those to the state archives once they're scanned, because then, you know, we won't have to keep them. But there are some things like unsolved homicides that maybe we're still working in that case, that we would keep, maybe we would keep the hard copy here at the Justice Center so that we would have access to those records if we needed to go back and check something that was physically in a box. But it shouldn't be much. It should really be maybe like 1 to 5% of what we have, a very small portion. So there'll be a few, but not much.
The other thing, just kind of wanted to understand where all these, I'm going to call them boxes, where all these boxes are they all in all facilities, or are we renting other facilities to house some of these items that need to be scanned?
Right now, they're all in our facilities. So we put up through, let's see, I think we have 2010 forward up at the Justice Center. That's what was able to fit into the file system that is up there. And then the rest are in the old PD holding cells at City Hall. And so we'll be emptying those out first, getting those scanned first to free up that space.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. I don't have any other questions, but glad to hear we got the grant, and thank you so much for you and your team's work.
And thank you to you guys for understanding the issue and being very supportive of us in this process. It has made a huge difference already, and I know it will more on our ability to respond to the public. So thank you.
All right, the next item on our agenda is the 2021 third quarter police department report.
First, I'd like to acknowledge Rebecca and her contributions. I have the best employees. That's all I got to say. I really appreciate how professional she comes across and represents for us. That being said, I think it's going to be a tough act to follow Chief Golden with the amount of energy and excitement he brought to his presentation, but I'll do my best. So let me share my screen before I jump in, make sure everybody can see.
Yep, we can see it.
So a lot in staffing. Aside from our commission folks, we've been having some difficulty with recruitment and retention for the year. The same went into our third quarter. We didn't have anybody leave us in the third quarter, but we did add some staffing, beginning with our victim advocate, Lana Imbenetti, who started on July 1st with us. She came to us from Westminster PD, Colorado, as their victim advocate, and she's worked for us previously for about a year between 2017 and 2018 as our disposition research specialist. We also brought on new record specialists Aaron Bozen and Katie Guerin. Both started in August and September, respectively. And then long anticipated the fruition of the work that began with Chief Linton, bringing on our mental health professional, Jackie Harris, who started with us the first week of August. It's a co-responder program that we partnered with Sound Health, and she's been working out of our patrol division. She's already deployed to the field several times and already been a great benefit to not only the community, but the efficiency of our department in handling some special needs. Jermaine Castillo started with the police department as a new police officer. He came to us from Seattle PD. He started with us on the 16th of August, and he was one of their Seattle's community service officers, which is a non-commissioned position that work with the community. We had some recognition during the time frame. We recognized Detective Steve Donnelly and our transport officer, John Long, where they were recognized in August for being the department's employees of the second quarter. We also had Delta White Center Masonic Lodge had their Outstanding Police Officer Recognition Day, which they do every year. This year's recipient under great protest was me. So I was recognized for the contributions I made to changing some of our department processes and including community members and what they saw as being as stepping up during the time of some civil unrest and for my work with the I-940 and LaTaxa and the legislation on the new reef managers. So there are a lot of other officers more deserving than me. I was humbled that they provided this, but my staff worked behind my back, so I didn't have much of a say in it because it was already pushed forward before it was too late for me to say anything and make them change.
Can I just stop and say congratulations?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for telling us.
Yeah, well, you know, Fee also helps me out with putting together the third quarter report, and she puts these in here, and I told her to delete it, and she absolutely refused, and we all know she's the real boss. So some third quarter highlights. We've been working with the owners of the Days Inn. They were tagged as a chronic nuisance ordinance several months ago, and we've had regular meetings with them and have been communicating on a consistent basis. Recently, we've been discussing their stats and criminal activity, which is kind of plateaued. They were actually dropping stats recently. It's kind of leveled out. They haven't increased, but we're seeing activity that isn't quite going away like we were hoping. But they've been great partners in trying to work on that. And since then, we've also worked with them to install new security lighting, enforcement of vehicle registration policies, and the reduction of the number of pastures and vehicles in the semi-truck areas, as well as reducing the number of stolen vehicles that have been located on the property. They've been really good about policing their own property and creating an uninviting property for those that want to commit crimes. The owners have also invested in improving even more lighting, parking signage, and overhauling their vehicle registration process to date. I meet regularly on a monthly basis with the school superintendent, Dr. Herndon, and this quarter was no different. Really working closely on our discussions about the school resource officers, which no decision has been made yet, but I have met with the school and teachers back in August, where we had an open forum in their auditorium where they got to ask questions surrounding the school resource officers and law enforcement in the schools. We had set up meetings to meet with the parents and separate meetings for the students for when the students came back to the school in September. However, Dr. Herndon wanted to reach out and have a mediator or a liaison help facilitate those meetings, which he now has somebody that has agreed to work with us. And so over the next month, I'll be meeting with the students and families regarding the whole discussion surrounding school resource officers. On July 13th, I met with the executive director of Holden South Center, which is an assisted living and memory care center for seniors. We did a tour of their building and discussed the relationship between their community and the police department. We try and make regular walkthroughs down there, just like we do for SHAG, and meet the residents, and they're a growing community member for us. We have held several community meetings over the tail end of the summer, July and August, which included SHAG, Marsville Apartments, and Airmark Apartments, where we have discussions about safety within their own environment, what they can do to better protect themselves. Good examples would be their secure parking, where garage doors automatically open and close for residents with fobs while watching when you come in, making sure nobody's following you in. When you go indoors that give access to the building, making sure that they close all the way. And simple tips like that, while also answering direct questions and Q&A from the residents. And making ourselves available to them. Our community policing team also assisted with Pastor Jan and her tutoring mentoring program. They're the first official community use of our Justice Center. We used our EOC and they did tutoring during the summer months, Monday through Friday. So it was pretty impressive to watch them provide that service. And CPT, as well as Commander Boyd, helped assist with several of the classes. Also an interesting note, one of the tutors, it was Past Chief Linton's daughter. with the city and state lifting restrictions related to COVID, we were able to organize Night Out Against Crime, which was a success, incredible opportunity for us to meet with the community and participate in the events. We had several council members join us in that endeavor as well. And the rain held off right to the very end. We got a little bit of a downpour, but for the most part, most of the events had already closed down for the night. So it was really successful, really had a good time getting out with the community. We also made routine habits of talking with our unhoused community and providing them with water, food, beverages. The community police team continued their contact on our growing number of homeless individuals in the community, with specific attention to the encampments that were coming up in public view and creating some potential health risks. We've been very quick working with Public Works and at times parks to make sure that we're addressing the issue. We had a couple of chronic ones that kept cropping up. As soon as somebody would leave, somebody else would move back in, and we're doing our best to stay on top of it on a regular basis. Officers stayed in contact with the head of security for Foster High School and prepping the kids for the coming back to school, go over plans for violent incidents at the school, the role of school resource officers at the school, and how to work hand in hand with the security team until school resource officers, a decision is made on school resource officers and whether or not they're going to return. I work personally with Canyon RV Park. They were having some issues with some drug-related foot traffic to some of their trailers. And over the last couple of weeks, that was back in July, but over the last couple of weeks, they finally were able to move one of their problem tenants out. The moratorium on evictions doesn't apply in an RV park setting. And they were cognizant of the concerns of making sure we weren't putting people out. Now, mind you, these individuals own their RVs. It was a matter of moving their RV somewhere else besides their park. But they had found out that the owner of the RV had been tested positive with COVID. And so they gave her extra time. So they gave her an extra month to move out in consideration that she was not in a position to prepare or go move. So hats off to the owners of the RV park and the way that they handled that. Officers, detectives, myself, on July 29th at South Center Mall, we did the Coffee with a Cop, which all of us enjoy immensely. It's a chance to meet with the kids, play games with them, talk with community members. And I would probably say we were down there for about 2 hours, and during that time frame, we probably talked to 100 plus different people. I mean, there were a lot of people that kept walking through. Deputy Chief Lund was there. All of our commanders came by. All of the CPT, our PIO. I mean, there was representation from the department and from the community as a whole. It was a well-established and event that came off really well. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I hate having to rush any of this, but I want to be able to get Elena in around 6:30 just so she has enough time to give her presentation as well. If we could go through a little quicker just to leave time for questions too.
Yep. Finish up in about 2 minutes. How's that?
Okay. Sounds good.
So, and at the end of August, I also had the privilege of meeting with Caitlin Skilton, who's currently serving the community as the title holder of Miss Wheelchair Washington and is also a commissioner on Seattle's Disability Commission. We discussed, what training looks like for officers related to ADA and what our policies, ordinance, and laws are in effect that could be revised that make it even better for ADA and providing services to them from a law enforcement perspective. We also met with Cascade Behavioral. The slide says that we met with Cascade Behavioral CEO, but before meeting with the CEO, we actually met with labor and had discussions with them back when that initial incident that prompted a lot of the recent attention. And so we met with labor and we met with management so we could get a general understanding of what was going on. And we continue to respond to Cascade as necessary, as well as providing service to both the employer and the staff that are currently still picketing. Let me scroll down and cherry pick here. A lot of similar quarterly meetings and monthly meetings that have gone on. What I would like to highlight is our accreditation process. We haven't been accredited for almost a decade now. Some problems with the infrastructure of the old police department as they cracked down on state accreditation just didn't come up to snuff. So the decision was made we would wait until we get into the Justice Center and design the Justice Center to meet the accreditation process. We have officially been through the vetting. Next month, in about 3 weeks, Commander Boyd and I go to Southeast Washington for the biannual conference where we will then formally request certification. They will vet us and then we'll be officially an accredited agency, which essentially means we meet recognized industry standards for law enforcement practices. School zone cameras went into effect on a warning basis, and as of 2 weeks ago, they are now live. I don't have an update on that. I'll bring that back for the fourth quarter. There was participation and investigation with fire and King County Fire on the Maple Crest Apartments fire, which was an incredible citywide effort. I know you've all been briefed on that, are very familiar with that. And the department as a whole continues to work on it as part of the independent investigation team with our neighboring agencies and investigating officer-involved shootings. Just real quick on the stats. A month-by-month breakdown as you come into the third quarter, you can actually see our case reports are slightly down. However, our calls for service are pretty much status quo, right where they would be for in the range. So we have had an increase in some robberies and violent crimes with some shootings that have taken place over the quarter. However, we've seen that rise in the region, not just in Tooele, and we're working closely as a region to try and resolve those issues.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions for Chief?
I have some questions. I'm happy to... Well, T5, can you just remind us all where T5 is? I'll just ask that question.
So the TOM 5 is Tooele from 144th North on the west side of I-5 until you get to the overpass of 599 effect. Okay. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. That's the TOM 7. It's 144th South.
South.
And then west of I-5, up right until Military Road.
Okay, that's all I have now. I'm glad to see the numbers going down, and sounds like you're engaging on a broader discussion where we do see the uptick, and happy to keep engaging, but we don't have to do it all tonight.
Councilmember Edan?
I don't have any question, but was it just me or part of the slide decks that the chief was talking about was not available to me, I guess. You know, I didn't see that. It's on the agenda item, but I don't think I've gotten the slide decks.
I will double check and make sure that we have that sent out to you.
I only get electronic, so I don't get hard copies. So the hard copy wasn't in there. But if I could get the electronic version, that would be great.
Okay. Okay, I will send that to you. Would the rest of the committee like copies of that?
I got the, in the electronic version I got, I had it. So if we could just get Councilmember Edon sent the slide deck, because there's a lot of information in there. You guys were very, very busy, especially in just really busy. So thank you so much. And I'm sorry for cutting your time short.
That's okay. You did it equitably. You cut off Norm. It was only 50 seconds. And I was rushing. I was trying to get through. Any other questions for me?
No, congratulations, Chief. Thank you. I know it's really hard to talk yourself when in any time, so I just wanted to say thank you and congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Definitely. All right. Our last agenda item is on the Green Tukwila program. We have Chris and Olena.
Yeah. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for having me and for holding the space tonight. So I appreciate everyone rushing through and cutting short. So thank you so much. How much time do I have? Five?
You have about 15 minutes.
Oh, that's plenty. I got a 5-minute thing, and then we'll open up for questions and answers. So my name is Alina Perry, and I am a specialist for, I was hired for events and volunteers, but have kind of been sucked into the ever-growing Green Tukwila program and Adopt-a-Spot program. So I am now working full-time on just those two programs. So real quick, I want to go through like a bullet point history of this very young program, because I think it shows the growth and tells the story of what's happening now and what's going to be happening in 2022. So in 2016, the 20-year stewardship plan was adopted by the city that outlined 138 acres to be restored in Tukwila. And this is a very brief summary of the history. So there's a lot in here I am leaving out for time. But in 2017, Forterra was contracted to run work parties with volunteers and kind of hold the plan. Our activated sites where we activated Tukwila Park. Later in the year, we added Cottonwood Corner and then Crystal Springs. Kind of we added late 2017 to 2018. When we started this work, there was nonprofits that was already doing some great work in Tukwila. Forterra was already here. Earth Corps was already here with a Sound Steward program. And so when the Green Tukwila program started and the city got involved, we just kind of pulled everybody together. So with that happening, Forterra also had some contracts that were outside of this program with the Duwamish Hill Preserve and the Shoreline Challenge, but I'll speak to those later. And then Earth Corps had a Sound Steward program at Kotika Park and was running volunteer work parties in Tukwila. In 2017, the Regreen the Grants went live, which is part of the RIA 9 for the city, which is another big piece of this puzzle. In 2018, our contract with Forterra for the Green Tukwila program expired, and city staff took over all of the Green Tukwila program operations. At that time, we were hosting private work parties at Tukwila Park with the business community that were growing. Cottonwood Corner now had a permanent steward and was running 6 work parties annually. McKinstry Construction started work parties at Crystal Springs, 4 to 6 work parties a year that Forterra led through a contract with them, but the city staff supported. And then we identified our annual events being Day of Caring, Green Tukwila Day, 2 Duwamish Alive events, a fall and spring, and then an MLK Day. And so our work parties went from little to big, plus private ones for team building. In 2019, it just really started to go. Volunteers were interested in participating. All of our work parties that we put on the city website all had growth to them. I was getting interest from Boeing, REI, some of our local businesses wanting to do team building through restoration in Tukwila. And so it just kind of exploded. Our contract with Forterra at that time at Duwamish Hill Preserve expired, which they ran 6 work parties a year with Friends of the Hill. And they also had a set number of professional crew days that they had at the park to help with noxious weeds that volunteers can't take on. Earth Corps canceled their Sound Steward program due to a change in their organization, and Kotika Park got handed over to city staff. And then, as I was saying, all of our work parties got larger and there was more private work parties, plus our signature events. In 2020, pandemic hits, all work halts. And people beg to work, may I say, for wanting to go out and work in our parks. Our stewards had a really hard time with it. And so when we could, the forest stewards, we let them work with their families and in pods so they could continue the work that they're doing in our parks. Partner in Employment created a youth green training program, and Tukwila was one of the cities where they wanted to do that work, and so they started at Tukwila Park. And then the Adopt-a-Spot program launched, and that program, stewards just started signing up immediately with very limited marketing. The growth for that one was just right off the bat. In 2021, our work parties resumed. We had limited numbers due to COVID protocols, but we were able to divide volunteers and not turn them away to like divide up sites to have multiple groups at one time. And then the big hit happened where the South King County Fund environmental grants launched, and four local nonprofits applied for funding to work in Tukwila and received it. These nonprofits alone increased our number of work parties by 8, plus the admin on the flip side of it. All of these groups didn't know much about restoration and was coming to the city saying, we want to do this great work, we want to partner, we want to create these relationships, we want to be involved, but we need the city to show us how and help lead us on where, how, tools, you name it. Volunteers start returning to work parties. The Adopt-a-Spot continue to grow. We currently have 18 stewards and more folks interested. The community started asking for one-time litter cleanup events I started running for folks that didn't want to become a steward but wanted to get out and do cleanup events. There's been multiple requests for environmental education. So Nature Vision is going to be hosting our first adult watershed environmental education class in November. Cascade Water Alliance is paying for it. So we'll see how that goes. But that's just an adult one. There's also requests for youth environmental education. And then our a new steward at Riverton Park started restoration, which was 9 more work parties a year with the neighborhood there. And then Duwamish Hill Preserve has their 6 work parties. Cottonwood Corner resumed 4 to 6. They're about 20. Those are all about 20 people each work party. And then Green Tukwila Day and Duwamish Alive are back with high numbers. And I want to report that last Saturday, the Duwamish tribe came out and spoke, and we had 30 people, including bridging cultural gaps on site, and we had just a magical work party. So it's kind of blossoming. I'm seeing that before we had volunteers and we had business groups, and then we kind of had these port-funded nonprofits coming in, and going into 2022, we now have volunteers growing, business groups, and port-funded nonprofits applying again. And so we're just at the seams. Right now, I'm the only staff member dedicated to this. I am getting some support from some parks employees. We've done some training for some on-the-ground help, but it's just me, and I'm kind of at capacity. But I want to let you guys know or become aware of the opportunities that I'm aware of as of now. There's obviously more coming, but the ones I know now is that business groups are expressing interest in team building through private events again. Nature Vision and Cascade Water Alliance want to get involved and do more environmental education at no cost to us. The Tukwila Children's Foundation, I met with them, and they're interested in partnering, programming, or just getting more voices in the conversation. The nonprofits that are applying for port funding for 2022 that I'm aware of, because the application was just due last Friday, is the Bhutanese Community Resource Center wants to do a 5-year commitment to Tukwila Park to steward. They are just doing a phenomenal job. If anyone ever wants a tour, I would love to give you a tour of the work that's being done at Tukwila Park right now. Partner Employment applied for multiple weeks to work in Tukwila again to grow their youth training program. Also, when their youth training program goes out for opportunities, I've been sending it around to see if Tukwila youth want to apply. Most of their work is being done in Seattle, so transportation is a barrier for that one, but it's great that we can at least get it out there since it's stipend. The Service Board wants to do a 3-year stewardship plan at Duwamish Hill Preserve. They want to become a forest steward as an organization, and they want to do 5 to 8 work parties a year with King County youth for the next 3 years. They're brand new. They just emailed me out of the blue 2 weeks ago, so that's a new one. And then Tilth Alliance is interested in developing gardening programs, building resources, and growing cultural relative plant starts for the community and working with the community at Goley Gardens. The Duwamish tribe is interested in finding ways to partner, especially with Duwamish Hill Preserve. Whether that's stewardship, they're not sure, but they want to support the work that Friends of the Hill have been doing. And volunteers are just starting to return to work parties. So what I'm seeing is that Green Tukwila is loved and growing every year. The pandemic did not stop the growth, but changed how the growth is happening. The South King County Environmental Grant took out some barriers for nonprofits. Adopt-a-Spot grew with a model that allowed folks to participate on their own time in their own neighborhood park, and smaller work parties created deeper connections to the work and each other. Businesses, partners, community groups, and residents want to be a part of the environmental conversation in South King County. They are showing up for call of action. Green Tuckwilla is a community wellness program. It brings everyone together to learn about environmental issues while healing the people and the land. These programs are small and only support a certain aspect of the environmental field at this time. The more partners, the more voices in the conversation will create a larger impact, stronger community, and a healthier Tuckwilla for the future. So that's what I see, and that's kind of the pulse of what's happening right now.
Thank you. I hear myself like echoing. I really appreciate you coming to talk about this, and especially the growth that we've seen in this program. I've seen the growth, and I think it's a really important one. You mentioned that you're the only person who is, and I know you're receiving support now, but I'm just wondering if anybody could speak to, I know you said it was supported by Forterra before, and I know Councilmember Edan had to step away because he currently serves on the board. But I'm wondering if your position is sustainable funding, and, you know, I put this out to my other council member who's still here, whether this is a program that we could, you know, support using some of the ARPA funds that we have to increase support for it.
So, Chris Kelly, Parks and Rec Manager, just a little bit of background on Alina's position and making her full-time. So we, Parks saw the growth and did what we could within our own budget, staffing-wise, and we have made her three-quarter time full-time. So at least we have her in capacity now kind of going forward. It's no longer a grant allocated position. So that's the first, that's phase one of this. So that part is complete, but you're right. It's growing, and we have a very strong person that's going to make this even stronger and bigger and better for the whole city. So, I mean, it's a decision we're going to have to make as a city and as a council going forward, you know, just how big we want this to be.
Thank you. Councilmember Edan.
Yeah, Councilman Dallas James Johnson, I think for the record, you said my name that I serve. I think that was the Councilmember Quinn that serves the board for Terra. That's why he stepped out of this meeting. I just want to say thank you for being here, Alina Perry. I really appreciate you giving us an update. There's a lot of great stuff happening. I know a couple of youth that have worked really have never had the opportunity, including my little brother who's 16 years old that worked last summer. So, tremendous, really, experience. He's something that he's never been exposed before, and he loved it. And all of his friends participated in. So this is something that that I hear that, you know, especially the communities of community of color, refugee or immigrant communities in our communities that aren't really exposed, are really taking and coming and working through, especially with the PIA organization that have partnered with the city. That really created a new opportunity, a new front, and new demographics to really enjoy and participate and preserve. To the question that the chair posted, I totally think we should definitely look into, as we're really discussing the ARPA funds right now, figure out a ways. Alina looks very busy, and there's a lot more coming up. If new organizations, a new round of grants are available, the demand is going to be high, and how we support this is something that we need to look ways to figure that out. Something that's not really related to the last item. I think when I requested, I think it was, you know, I just opened what's titled now the Green Takula Program, but that was actually the police department's report. So just want to let Chief Drever, you don't need to send me the electronic version that I requested earlier. Thanks. I yield back.
Thanks. Maybe this is something I'll want to bring up probably in the discussion in the next meeting when we talk about ARPA funds. But thank you, Elena, for coming. And we really appreciate the work that you do. I'm sorry, Councilmember Dunn, there's an item, a walk-on item that was urgent. I texted Deshaun to tell him to come back. But I believe Laurel, I don't know, Laurel, if you want to raise it because it's not on the agenda, but it's related to the teen center.
Thank you. So, and I also got in touch with Councilmember Quinn. I'm not sure if he'll want to join because it's related to the county, but Rachel Bianchi is on deck.
Oh, okay.
Good evening, Councilmember.
Wait, if it's related to the county, then Zach probably can't weigh in either.
I don't know, depending on, go ahead, Laura. I'll yield to Laura.
This is, Rachel will explain it better, but this is keeping you informed about a funding opportunity. We're not asking for action. So I think it's appropriate for Councilmember Redon to stay.
Okay. Thanks, Laurel.
I'll stay.
This is a good news story, I think. So for the record, Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator. So on Monday, we learned of a grant opportunity through the voter-approved King County Parks Levy to support, that could potentially support the Teen and Senior Center. And so they have a number of different grants through the levy that they do each year. And so for feasibility studies related to parks, there is up to $100,000 available for a project like ours. And I think that the Teen and Senior Center, I think we, the project team, thinks that the Teen and Senior Center was a perfect project for that. So, you know, per our policy, we do come to committee and look for approval for the grant. Because the grant was due this past Friday, we did go ahead and do it. If the committee does not agree, we can always pull our application. However, this would be for $100,000 to get us to supplement some of the funding that we're going to need for this next phase through schematic design. So I'm here looking for your approval, which I hope we have. But if not, again, we will pull it. But we're very hopeful that this is the beginning of adding in partners on this project. So happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions. I absolutely approve of it. Councilmember Udon, I don't
know. I'm always like, why does staff need to come here to ask, you know? Totally in support of going, and I'm glad you applied for it. So yes, I do approve you going and seeking an opportunity to make our city better. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I hope to be back in front of you all early next year to tell you that we got the grant. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the update. All right. I swear I run the longest meetings and you're totally opposite than me.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah,
thank you. I was just going to say maybe the fourth quarter of fire and police, we should look into different meetings.
Separate them. Definitely.
Thank you.
All right.
Everybody.
Everyone.